EMS on the Mountain is an entertainment, educational, and commentary product recorded by Sean and Mike and produced by them. Nothing recorded by Sean, Mike, or any of the guests of the show is endorsed nor authorized by their respective employers or agencies unless explicitly outlined. All commentary and statements made are their own. Always follow your respective medical protocols. Nothing said on this platform should be considered medical direction. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to the EMS on the Mountain podcast, a show for those interested in austere and wilderness medicine. This podcast provides insight into the unique aspects and challenges of bringing modern EMS into wilderness and austere environments.
Yes, and Sean, this will be the first episode
there we
of
go.
The year.
So, welcome back, everyone. Aren't you glad you're here? I know we are.
Yeah, man.
So, yes, first episode of the new year. Here we are. You got us both, as usual. Like, we've never done a solo that I'm aware of.
No. Maybe we'll try that this year.
Or not. Whatever.
Okay.
So, as our first topic of the year, apparently this is something that's been going around the social medias.
The proverbial interwebs, as it were.
Yes, on the line, as they say.
On the lines.
For you tech people, on the line. When does, we'll call it aggressive leadership or stern leadership or leadership in general, when does that cross the line into you just being bullied and your boss is mean to you?
When are you being an asshole? How's that sound?
Yeah, that's different, though, because you can be an asshole and be right and everything is done correctly. You're just an asshole.
But is that right, Sean? Is it right to be an asshole?
Yes. Tell me.
I think everyone that's ever known us would probably describe you and I both as proverbial assholes.
Yeah, that's why
the problem is that they keep putting up with us because it turns out we don't suck at this. And people tend to stay alive if they were alive before they made contact with us. If they're dead, my assholeness is not going to make them undead. Yeah. I give it the college try. And for those that are just tuning in, which is probably one new person this year, if we're lucky.
I think three.
We specialize in the wilderness medicine. So if you're dead in the woods, there's no, oh, we got Ross. It just doesn't friggin' happen. So don't make it sound like I am anti-dead people. I'm just saying, if you died in the woods, and it took me a couple of hours to get to you. You're not coming back.
Dead in the woods.
Yeah. You're bare food. Anyway, man, can you tell we're recording this early in the morning? I am interested in what Sean thinks. This has been making its rounds a little bit on the internet. It felt applicable to me because I've gotten coaching most of my life and I'm a stern whip cracker. And then I go to the LinkedIn's every time I'm feeling bad about myself and all of the pages that are like, to be a great leader, you have to hold people accountable. And I'm like, oh, I'm amazing. Like, I love myself. But the truth is that there is probably a right way and a wrong way to give coaching and nudge people. And it did occur to me that more than anything else, most of the content out there is around pre-hospital street, quote unquote, EMS. It's a little different in the woods when you have not only, this is going to pivot nicely into integration of local responders. We want to record as well for the first bit of this year, but how you approach people and what you say can not only result in hurt feelings at the time, but can also result in people either getting excited about doing the work, we're always understaffed, more help is better, or them saying, I don't ever want to be around that person again, I'm out, which I think I've been pretty good at so far in my career. This reminds me of the one time when you and I had been up all night, and then we went and found the ski patrol guys in the middle of the summer that had duct taped that lady's legs together because she had, quote, two twisted ankles. Simultaneously,
bilateral
she fell down.
Ankle fractures.
Bilateral ankle fractures, according to the report, which is really hard to do when you're walking on flat ground. And I was probably a little bit of a dick when I started cutting the duct tape off, and the provider unseen, whom I'd never met before, told me, "Oh my God, you can't do that. I've already splinted the legs." And I was like, "Yeah, homie, this ain't splinting. I don't know what this is, but this looks like some stupid shit." So I probably could have been nicer. Should I have been nicer? I don't know. Probably. That patient also wasn't exactly what I would call super engaging, but
yeah,
I probably didn't handle that as well. And there are ways to handle things, so I thought we'd talk about it. How should you handle people that suck, in your opinion?
So I think we have to differentiate. Here's my big word of the morning.
Differentiate?
Yeah. I think you need to keep in context of your location. Are you on scene, actively working with these other people with patient present? Or are you now off the scene and, we'll say, in a more secluded or away from other people's observations, right? Because those two...
Let's go with A first and then B.
Right. So if you're on scene, okay, so if I have somebody that's really jacking stuff up on scene, I just tell them to go away. Like, I will tell them, like, okay, step back, quit what you're doing. Johnson, you're in. Here's what we need done. And I will tell the other person, like, either just go stand over there, do something, like, here, hold my IV bag. You're now a human tree, right? Like, just on scene, if it's, I will say specifically, if it's a critical scene, I become very terse. Like, everything is very short and clipped. I'm just going to look at you. I'm going to tell you what I need you to do. And I expect you to then do it. If you don't, I'm going to give you probably one more shot at it. And if you just can't figure out how to fucking find the C-collar bag or whatever it is, you're out, somebody else is in, right? Like, I don't have time to play around. There's not going to be any nice in the guy. Well, gee willikers, maybe you should go to the left rear compartment on the unit and then pull this out and then check the blue bag and find compartment number 4. Like, there's no time for that shit, right? Like,
right.
If you have not been training and keeping up with your other stuff, for you as a fellow responder in these situations, shame on you, right? If you're told, hey, we need the backboard. You don't know where the backboard is. Either speak up immediately, say, where is it? Or go freaking
or,
get it. Or, yeah, maybe a poor example, but.
Here's the kicker, though. In the woods, if it didn't come, you ain't getting it, right?
Correct. And the woods,
so
I think,
there isn't a lot of remediating, like lack of equipment or unable to find something, because it turns out that if you're in the woods, it's either there or it's not.
Yeah. And I think that's a big point too, right? So if we're working relatively independently, or you and I together, and maybe we have a couple of other EMT level responders with us, or maybe no level responders with us. Everything's
that
on
never me. Happens. What are you talking about?
Right. So everything's on me. So if I don't know where my gauze is, that's my fault. Now, if I'm got my bag, it's organized the way I organize my bag. And if I have somebody with me and I ask them for gauze, I will tell them where it is. Right. Just because them rifling through it and pulling everything out, yard sailing, it isn't going to help either. So
agreed.
In those instances, no problem. Okay. Go into that second little pouch right there. Yep, that's the one. Grab me 2 rolls of gauze. Thanks. And that's generally because my hands might have blood on them or something else that I can't just do it myself. But I would say on scene is also not the time when you're like, you stupid piece of shit. Why'd you do this? How do you not know this? How long have you been in EMT? Where'd you go to EMT school? My God, who allowed you to be a paramedic here? Do you not know what a vein looks like? That's not when you want to start going into those conversations.
It's my career. Like, who, I believe the phrase, who allowed you to pass that test fell out of my mouth once.
Well, I will say, and this is probably my most infamous line that I've ever done this on scene, was that cardiac arrest you and I had years ago. And we had that.
Oh, you don't know what this is? Get the fuck off my scene. Yeah.
One of those, yes. She was really trying her best. She was a nurse, kept begging for a MAC 3, which I don't know what she thought she was going to do with that because she didn't want an ET tube with it. She wanted a MAC 3.
Wanted a MAC 3.
And so there we are with the King Airway, and she's like, what is that? And it's like, you don't know what this is? Get the fuck off my scene. At which point, Mike proceeds to drop said King Airway and secure it, right? Good job, right?
But it's also reminds me of those two ladies that were about 110 years old trying to help with that accident. And
Yeah.
She meant so well, but the fact that she yoked the tube out after I fought so hard to get it.
I know.
Right? Really did like, not make me happy, but it's fine.
That's one
it's
of cool. those. I'm a paramedic school instructor. You should stick with that because in the field.
You and Fred get along really well.
You have but... no idea what you're doing. So we're very polite to them, though. We thank them.
Yeah.
For their assistance.
I brought that up because I think it exemplified a progression in our ability to not be assholes. And this is really what I was angling at, right? There is a time and a place. Okay. So this is especially hard. There's rural systems out there. Hell, there's paid systems like this. But in general, if you're a full-time paid provider, you're working with the same general group of people most of the time. And most departments, unless you work for New York City, you're not so big that nobody knows who Steve Wozniak or, well, he's the Apple dude. But
that's like Donaghy's co-founder of Apple.
I don't know that unless you're in a massive organization, word of whether or not you suck travels. And even if people don't know you personally, but you generally work with the same people. A relatively high acuity wildland or wilderness sort of event could bring in half a dozen different agencies, most of whom you've maybe never met before. The number of times I've been on calls in the woods with you, Sean, or alone, and 2/3 of the people that are there I've never seen before, that happens quite a bit.
Right, all the time.
Right.
I recognize that logo on that t-shirt, but I have no idea who you are.
This may become a whole nother topic in and of itself, but this is where standards and expectations come into play. Good Samaritans will often, here's the best analogy I can give you. Inevitably, if you do EMS, you will eventually run across a doctor on scene somewhere that happens to be a Good Samaritan at the time. And if there's an individual that's standing to the side and maybe offering to help a little bit, they're probably an emergency physician. If you have a doctor that wants to get into the fray and tell you how to do your job, they're probably a fucking podiatrist, right? Because emergency physicians know what they don't know, and they're really smart people, and they're good at fixing broken bodies in a hospital, but they also understand that when you're in the middle of the woods or you're in the middle of the street, it's a different game, and the people that specialize in that are pre-hospital providers, and emergency physicians get that, right? I have gotten pretty good at picking out volunteers that want to be the hero versus having the knowledge. Because really good ER nurses that happen to come upon a thing in the woods, they're out hiking that day. Remember the one girl we had on that one call? Like, she was a provider from another agency, and she clearly identified herself as a provider from another agency and said, how do you want me to help you? As opposed to saying, this is what's wrong with Timmy Bob. I am going to do all the things to fix him. Hand me your shit to do the stuff.
Yes. That was and another good example of that one is almost a full decade ago now. At the hairpin turn, we had that lady who was having those significant cardiac issues, right? Remember, we rolled up on scene, and there were these two Good Samaritan bystanders that were helping this lady out with her husband, and they gave, like, this pristine, like, pre-hospital, like, patient report. Like, we have a 65-year-old female, blah, 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 presenting with, blah, blah. And I was like, somebody's been to first aid class.
Yeah, they have.
And the gentleman was like, oh, yeah, we're both actually nurses for visiting, blah, blah, blah. So, oh, what kind of nurses? I go, we're both ED nurses. Noted. Thank you. Right.
So and you've been on the receiving end of this conversation
so
for
that's
100
why,
years.
Exactly, right? And they gave that same basic pre-hospital type or bedside turnover report to us as soon as we got on scene, and then was, let us know if we can help you with something. And that's all they did, right? They didn't ask to, like the one lady, give me your Mac 3. You want anything with that? Just give me the Mac 3. Okay, get out of the way. Like,
and you should have handed her a Mac 3 and a start kit. And like, what are you going to do with those?
What do you want with it? Sure, here you go. Just hand her the blade. Good job.
Here's the Mac 3 blade. You want to handle?
But yeah, and then, yes, I have had, and I don't remember what type of physician, but he was all up in it. He was an MBA.
Mm-hmm.
And he was all over. I was like, all right, hey, doc, I got this now. He's like, oh, this is what you need to be doing. You'd be retaining control of the patient and traveling with me. No, I will not. Cool. You can now get out of the way. Then you have those guys who's the ED physician. Hey, have you considered whatever? I can give you a hand. Fucking deal with that. And you're like, hey, doc, like, I know you. And so
you look familiar. Yeah.
There is a difference.
Yeah. To bring it full circle, though, because my intent was not to talk about worst stories.
Yeah.
But I'm leaving that in because it was fun. The question is, how do we interact with those people? And I think sometimes we don't spend time teaching our providers how to not be assholes.
No.
I think we're not very good at explaining what we need and why we need it and how to be part of the solution, as opposed to saying, hey, you're an idiot, move. I think the general rule that somebody doesn't know what they don't know applies here. And a lot of people just want to help. And that can apply to Good Samaritans. That can apply to people in the woods. That can apply to paramedics. That can apply to like brass wearing white shirts that don't do the field thing anymore, but just want to be helpful. One of the podcasts I was listening to, the story of the supervisor that shows up and spikes a bag and is in the truck laying equipment out for you, as opposed to the supervisor that shows up and immediately starts barking orders for the field personnel.
Yeah.
Either way, I think the first step in figuring out how to handle these situations is to remind yourself that those individuals want to generally do the right thing. And sometimes I think in fire rescue, we quickly bias toward, you're doing it wrong, you must be an idiot. Ignorance is not an excuse. And this will come into play when we talk about how to handle these conversations once the call is over. But I'm going to give a general statement here. I'm not to call any individual out, but the number of people I've met in my time doing wilderness work, and it's new people every year that we interact with. Most of the individuals want to do the right thing. They get into it for the right reasons. There's a subset of people that get into it for personal reasons.
I want to do the adventure and get paid full time to work for a land management agency and be in the woods all day. That sounds amazing.
It's probably a fucking botanist. But in general, most of the providers we've come across want to generally do the right thing, but they never get taught how to actually do this. They don't see the volume. Like, you and I have advocated for a long time that if you want to get good at medicine, you cannot just work for a land management type agency and be good at medicine. You're not going to have enough interaction with patients to form clinical decision-making. But if I take that same principle and the thing we talk about all the time, hey, if you want to be good at this, you cannot just do this at your job. You got to work in a hospital part-time, or you got to work on a transport truck, or you need to go to a high volume system in your area or something. If I internalize my own rule set, being an asshole to people doesn't really motivate them to want to do stuff, to want to get better. I think my first general rule of thumb is assume good intent. And then assume they just don't know what they don't know. Well, sounds like I need to turn that off. Not at work anymore. Assume good intent, but also assume they just don't know what they don't know. So talking to somebody like they're a moron doesn't solve the problem. Now, on the other side of the coin, I actually think it's okay in extremis, when you have a patient that is in a bad way, to just say, move, I got this, and be very stern about it. Some of the stuff I've read, maybe this is a generational thing. Maybe I'm the old graybeard now. I don't really care about your feelings when Timmy is dying and you are not doing the right things to keep Timmy from dying. And I've hurt some people. I've made people very uncomfortable when I've said, no, move. I'm doing this now. This is the end of the conversation. And it's funny. I think back to this one paramedic that was very good. He has since retired. But I remember working a code with him. And the truck he came on had three providers. He was precepting an advanced EMT. Step one, nobody declared that this kid was an advanced EMT. So some of us were looking at him like, dude, you're the preceptee. Why are you not doing paramedic things? Wasn't until 5 or 6 minutes into the call, because we just knew he was the preceptee. It wasn't until 5 or 6, maybe 10 minutes into the call, where the preceptor said, all right, everybody stop. I am the PIC. I am the head motherfucker in charge. I'm running this code. You're going to do what I want. And the minute that was stated, the minute that was made, everything went better. Mm-hmm. But if you don't establish yourself early as the HMFIC, the guy that is going to handle the stuff, you're going to get a lot of people that just want to help. And they're not bad people. Don't treat them like shit. But it's okay to assert yourself and say, that's not going to help. Now I'm thinking back to the one event we had where everybody was really worried about this girl's blood pressure, and I'm staring at a compound open fracture that's bleeding. And yeah. I was like, I don't care about her blood pressure. Yeah. We've got to maybe make that stop bleeding and splint it a little bit. And there's a provider who I probably offended. They haven't been an advocate of mine for a long time. I believe a phrase, something along the lines of, I need you to splint that. And they went, how do you want it splinted? And my response was, you hold an EMT certification. Now's the time to use your fucking skills. Like, I don't have time to teach you to splint right now. I could have handled that better, but she was working on dying. We were working on coordinating helicopters and flying them to trauma centers. This wasn't the time to placate people, but I could have handled it better.
Well, and I would agree. Yeah, sure. A little bit. But at the same time, we both know that person. They weren't a new person, like an unknown entity, right? They were technically a known quantity. And so I think that response is essentially justified in that situation, right? Like, I know you should know this. What do you do? Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Find me an adult that can do this. Because I've had, again, not so much in the wilderness side, because again, normally it's you and or I or us together and a couple other people to assist at various provider levels, even if they're ALS level, where pretty much every time, as soon as we show up, everybody just, oh, thank God you're here. And everything now defaults to us, whether it needs to or not. We've shown up on straight BLS scenes and people are like, oh, okay, cool. You got this now. It's, ooh, chief, like you're more than capable of handling this. Like you've done a great job on splinting or bandaging, whatever we needed right now. Everything looks great. Keep on keeping on. You don't need me to get involved in this. Let me help you do something else. But I think, yeah, on those certain things, and I would say almost for, and this goes to you and I's experience over the last decade.
Two decades.
Of our particular agency, our two calls fall in that EMS spectrum of bullshit and oh shit, right? Like we very seldom have people that are in that middle ground where it's either
in our wilderness experience, we don't run a whole lot of Mima has known allergies and has asthma and is having a little trouble breathing. We don't catch the middle ground medical calls.
Yeah, it's either you
I have a splinter
really
and I think my finger's going to fall off, or you've been schwacked by a deer doing 60 on a motorcycle and you're working on dying because there's horns in your spleen. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's what I'm saying is like, we have had very few, we've had the occasional, you bad step and you definitely fractured arm, leg, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But very seldom have we had those middle ground things where you can take a little more time and maybe do a little on-scene teaching and coaching. So for us, it's either, it's low grade and sure, we can help coach you through and give you pointers on how to better splint that or bandage it or something. And we've done that. I know both of us have both done that on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get that bear versus motorcycle and the bear won, it's, we have no more time to play. This is what's got to happen. The traumatic arrest we had, it seems 2 years ago now, a year ago. I don't even know. You roll up on scene. It's, yep, okay, this is for real. Things need to be done. This is what it is. And you and I were the only two providers on scene for, probably 15 minutes, right? Essentially the duration of the traumatic code.
Yes. That's pretty common.
Some other folks showed up. And fortunately for us, did some traffic control and shut some things down. But, that was us too. And the Good Samaritan bystanders that were there. We were very polite and professional, which turned out to be a very good thing based on who was present at that scene. So that was kudos to us, but we could have been ginormous dicks to the two folks that were really trying to help and not super helpful, but we were playing nice. We were doing good things. But again, we've also both been on other calls where it's, hey, how do we want to do this? Look, dude, you're in charge of the tech team. Figure it out. Like, I have this to do, right?
I have work that has to get
achieved, right? That has to be done.
I can't do your rigging for you either. Like, I have to deal with this, right? Come on, man. Do your job now.
Do you mean when I had to run PIC to patient care and vector and helicopters at the same time?
No,
that's limited resourcing?
I'm
just being sarcastic.
But. Yeah, but you're not. But that's a different call, but the same thing, right? Okay, we're the first two responders on scene. We had two patients that were significantly injured, right? Mm-hmm. External and internal, like, they were hurt. Like, they were legit hurt. This wasn't just a couple of boo-boos. Yeah, and it's, okay, hey, cool, you're here. I need you to do the rest of this stuff. Thanks.
Yeah.
And then I shouldn't have to be checking on you, right? Just do that.
Also, don't tell me no if it turns out I'm the highest level provider, but that's neither here nor there.
And then, and then there's another one we had where it was like we needed some technical rope access assistance. And I was like, all right, how do you want us to do this? Dude, that's why you're here. Figure it out. I'm not going to stop working on this patient to show you how to do your job. Just
that so got done. That's,
I think
that is an interesting. That's an interesting problem in that, actually, I'm going to talk through this while I'm thinking. So this is going to sound stupid, but I'll get to a point. You and I often do the teaching as well as the higher level care where we play ball, right? Yeah. We don't work in an agency that has a separate training division where there's people that are assigned to teach and then there's people that do. We are the teachers for a lot of the higher level things. So I don't think this is unique to us, but I think it's somewhat directionally unique in that oftentimes when, let's use the rigging example, right? I'm just going to make something up here, but we're often the ones teaching the advanced rigging and we're also the ones doing the advanced care. But when it comes time to operate in the field, this is probably where we haven't done an awesome job of drawing the delineation to say operationally, this is how things have to work. And in an education framework, this is how things need to work because I can't stop doing the medicine to help you go rig or vice versa. Though most of the time when somebody's saying, how do you want me to rig this? I'm also tits deep in somebody that fell off a cliff and is working on dying. And I can't stop and be like, let's talk about vectors and angles of departure. And
yeah, departure angle.
But 90% of the time I'm the instructor in that space. I'm not. So it is a natural human bias to say, okay, teacher guy, help me. I'm not as experienced as you. I need to get this done. But world of a municipal system, right? You got truckies and you got medics there and the truckies do the truckie shit and the medics do the medic shit. And if a truckie is also a medic, they're a medic the day they're on the medic unit and they're a truckie the day they're on the truck. In the woods, like we come with all of it and we do both. And it depends on what you need at this time. We have not handled that well. And this is where I think the administrative side of it and the downtime time comes to.
Yeah, but at the same time, right? Like when we're teaching one or the other, because you and I have also been sent out to do the tech piece, right? Like they had enough.
And we ended up doing the medicine.
There were ALS providers already on scene. They had plenty of other personnel. They requested some ropes to do some minor technical pieces. And they're like, hey, can you guys go? And we're like, yeah, absolutely. So we dropped all med kit and we took rope kit. And then it was like, hey, you're here. You mind taking over this? And it's like, if I really have to, like, but why?
But also who's going to do rigging now?
Yeah. And so we ended up essentially, we helped with a couple of things and made some suggestions and everything was grand at that point. And then we basically did the rest of the rope stuff. But it's like, that went out in a very different dynamic, right? Where people knew that, okay, we're here to do, we'll help you here, but we're here for this. And that's what we did. But at the same time, like if you show up and I'm already, like you're saying, elbow deep in some pretty torn up trauma mess from a fall. Look, man, you're obviously not going to be the provider. You're the tech dude now. You're qualified. Mm-hmm. You've been certified. Go do that. If at the end of the operation, I have some questions about why you chose to do the thing you did, we can discuss it then. But you don't need to the stopping in for me to coach and then move on, that's really not going to happen.
That's fair. Kind of
shifted off topic from the original.
No, but I'm going to bring it back.
They're all
this is how we come back to. Yeah, this is also where we need to come back to. It's one thing to try to not be an asshole on scene. And the phrase that we used on the internet was, it's okay to chew ass at the time if things aren't going right. That's fine. I don't disagree with that, right? But that's also a very paramilitary sort of perspective, right? Yeah. Dude shooting at you, and if I don't get this guy to get his head down right now, he's going to fucking die. And you grab that kid and you fucking rip his head down and you say, don't fucking do that again. That's kind of the end of the conversation. I grew up, I started doing medicine in earnest, like right around the 2000s. So there was a culture of, I'm going to chew your ass if you get it wrong. The paramilitary thing was strong. And what's the saying? Trial by fire, right? There was a lot of people that would get their ass chewed and couldn't handle it. I recently heard somebody tell a story of how they saw can't remember whose podcast it was, but they were doctors. They were attendings that would tear into first and second year students and just rip them a new asshole. And was that right or was that not right? I don't know, but it was the culture of the time. I still think it is generally acceptable to be pretty curt and aggressive when life, limb, or eyesight are at risk, right? You can't play nice when somebody's about to walk on the rotor blades of a fucking helicopter or they're about to push a medication. This is something I'm somewhat notorious for. If you can't show me the vial and the needle that you use to draw the medication, I'm not fucking pushing it. And I've been called an asshole.
Yeah.
Because I've been like, no, you're not doing that. That's not going in as a preceptor, right? I've been like, that's not going in the patient. You need to redraw the meds. And they're like, but I just drew the blah, blah, blah. I go, great, but I didn't see you do it. And yeah. Part of my job is to make sure that you don't push an entire bolus of ketamine into this patient when you meant to give them Toradol, right?
Like, yeah.
This is a thing. Like, we have to care about this. And I do not waver on those things.
Now, because that's how you kill people is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they thought
it turns
they
out dying sucks.
Zofran, but it was Versed. And it's, yeah, I fixed the nausea, but.
I fixed it with respiratory depression.
People up, but yeah, no, and I agree with that 100%. Whenever somebody else has drawn my meds for me, they show me that syringe they handed to me. It's here's 2 mL. Here's the vial. It was. Fentanyl, 100 mics and 2 mL. There you go. And you're like, sweet, thanks.
Or I guess a better example, I have stopped paramedic students from doing certain procedures because it wasn't in the best interest of the patient at the time. And this wasn't learning time. This dude's really dying and we got to do some work time. I don't necessarily adhere to the mantra that for critical airways, that your most experienced provider needs to do the airway. I've heard that. Oh, if they're really critical, then it doesn't matter who the paramedic student is. The most critical or the most experienced provider. Experience doesn't equate good technique and good skill set.
That's
you've done
it
a lot.
Yeah, experience in most people's minds is only a measure of time, not actual skill.
I'm somewhat known for being an asshole when, you know, students will show up and be like, oh, I want the tube. This isn't up for debate. I'm the PAC. I'm going to decide who's going to intubate and when.
Yeah.
First, we need to nitrogen wash. Then we need to prepare for things. Let's get all the other things squared away. I want 2 IVs. We don't have to tube him right away. Air's going in and out of his face hole just fine. Intubation's not the priority. But it is also incumbent, and this, I'm going to bring it full circle. It is incumbent upon senior leaders to lead in an administrative framework. And I don't believe in the shit sandwich and I don't believe in all the other stuff, but I do believe in if there is anything that occurs on scene that requires intervention, it must be a conversation after the fact. You cannot intercede and say, we're not doing that, or this isn't happening, or I saw this thing and you were wrong, or I think you were wrong, and not engage in admin time to mitigate the problem, right? Telling people they suck without telling them how to suck less that's on you. You're being an asshole. It's your job to also be a coach and an educator. If you're a provider that is saying that so-and-so did something wrong, you need to go tell them why you think they did it wrong. And here's the one that people are going to agree with, I think. Could be wrong. You need to approach that from a position of humility and accept the fact that you could be wrong in saying they were wrong. What I mean by I've had paramedics come to me and say, you fucked this up. Whether I was a student or release provider, whatever the case may be, people have come to me after the fact and said, I think you fucked this up. You should have done X, Y, or Z. And even when I was a baby medic, there was a conversation I'm thinking of now where I said, no, here's why I did what I did. Here's why I didn't give that medication. Here are the things that I was seeing. Here is my clinical decision-making. Tell me why I'm wrong. And the person, the guy was known to be an asshole, but he turtled up and went, oh. And I think this is really critical. I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but you have to come from a perspective of, I'll call it intrigue and inquisitiveness, as opposed to say, you fucked this up and here's why. Maybe they were taught to do it. Maybe they're a brand new EMT and they were taught to collar differently than you were 25 years ago. Maybe they're a new EMT and they're using a piece of equipment in a different manner than you did because you're not crushing it and staying up to date on Stryker's latest content on how to fucking use the autoload. Whatever. I'm coming up with stupid examples.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
So in the admin time, or you come at them with a, here's what you fucked up and let me explain to you why. If it turns out you're wrong, nobody's learning shit and everybody's going to shut down. And I've been bad at this in my, historically, I've been very bad at this, but call a spade a spade. 98% of the time I'm right. Like they did it wrong or they didn't do a thing that needed to be done. But if I come at them and say, you're an idiot. Haven't she been released as a provider? Why didn't you get a blood sugar on this patient? The answer is usually going to be from BLS providers, I forgot, or it wasn't important, or you didn't tell me to do that. If you come in as an asshole, they're not really interested in engaging in a conversation. And that hasn't been talked about, in my opinion, right? You have to approach them from a point of, I could be completely wrong, but I think this is what we should have done, and here's why, and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Have I rambled long enough?
Yeah. No. Yeah. An appropriate amount of rambling. So I would say, yeah. So after you're off the scene, whatever happens there, yeah, try to remain professional, get things done, but you got to get things done. So the post-event debrief, whatever you want to call it, this is where I think, yeah, I think you're on the right track with this one. And then the way I know, if I see somebody that did some shit that I'm like, what in the fuck was that? Or why did you bother with that kind of thing? I like to lead out with, hey, tell me why you did X like this, or why did you do this, or why did you not do that? Let me hear what your thought process was first. Because like you said, it could be a, when we went to school, this is how we were told to do this. Okay, so that's a training issue we've got to fix. Or I just didn't know what to do, so I did this. Okay, again, it's a training issue. So it's not necessarily your fault. You were never, like, you didn't know how to use a teapot appropriately because when you were doing your, when you were in your release, nobody really showed you. You were sitting there having to read the package the whole time trying to put on this pelvic binder. Like, okay, we can fix that. We're going to go back.
Why did you say that? Because I had a complete right? Mental break and I didn't want to admit it, but I didn't know what a fuck teapot was when you said it.
Right. See, if I just told Mike to go get the teapot, he'd be like, what in the shit's a teapot? A tripod? What?
What?
A selfie in this one? What's going on?
Exactly.
Grand dog, right? Or let's say, hey, tell me why you decided to splint that arm or that leg the way you did. And I won't stop somebody unless it's going to be one of those harm to the patient kind of things.
Yeah.
If it's a style difference, that's fine. I've got the way I do things. And if you don't do things the same way, but you do them, we'll still say appropriately, you follow all the right principles and everything is done at the end of the day correctly, fine. My OCD might be like, but they didn't finish with whatever knot. Okay, like we can get over that, right? Like I can live with that. But if it's like one of those, so tell me about why you chose to pack the abdomen with gauze. So let's have a discussion on why that's not a good idea kind of thing, right?
Yep.
Immediately like, what the fuck? That's the most fucked up thing I've seen all week. My God, how did you get a license? Who did your release? Like, they need to be fired too kind of thing. I don't work that way. And I honestly never have. So in my youth, when I was in other leadership positions, in places you expect just to get your ass chewed, like just yelled at and reamed for stupid stuff. I remember one of the funniest things I ever did. We were away from America and one of the young guys made a poor choice, and I gave him about a 5-minute, hey, what's up with that? You don't want to do this, and this is why, and blah, blah, blah. And we got done, and he's, I got to tell you, you didn't raise your voice once, but that's like the worst ass chewing I've ever had in my life. I feel like a total asshole for doing it. Now it's like, all right, hey, kudos to me, because
yeah,
one of those, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed kind of speeches. And I have found that, and this is something I used to tell people, loud is not leadership. I don't care how much you yell and shout on scene, off scene, personal interactions. Loud isn't leadership, right? You can yell all you want on scene or afterwards at a debrief, right? That just means you're yelling, right? If you don't have a valid point, then what was the point of that whole outburst?
Right.
And I will say, running through one of my last deployment cycles, I had some guys, I absolutely lost my shit. And it was because we were doing live fire training and we were going down, moving some targets around and stuff. And rule one was, if you're back near the line, don't touch your goddamn gun.
Right? That is
one insane. One kid started monkeying with his shit and I just lost my mind, right? And it was like, what the fuck, man? One goddamn rule, right? We're playing by adult rules here. We're doing a bunch of this shit. Only thing you had to do was not touch your shit. And what's the one fucking thing? You know, I lost my mind, right? And later that night, people were like, damn, man. I was like, what? What was the one goddamn rule we had? Good. And it's like, all right, but what are you going to do about it? Then it's like, how are you going to fix your boy?
Right.
Okay. So I won't say that it's completely unwarranted. I will just say that
there has to be a damn good reason for it.
Totally losing your mind and just starting that giant shouting, shutting it all down thing. There's got to be a legit reason. And I think it really does fall into that life or limb. The concern is you do something and you inadvertently let one round go and you shoot one of your friends because you couldn't wait the extra 30 seconds for everybody to walk back. That could have been easily prevented by the one rule you had. It's like same thing. If you're that battalion chief on scene at a structure fire and you're ready to watch some firefighter do something stupid and you just lose it and you just snatch him up and throw him halfway across the lawn before he walks into a house, like without his bunker jacket on or something weird, then like justified, right? Or if you're on scene and you snatch somebody up by the back of their shirt, you pull them back 10 yards before they took that one more step and took another 20-foot fall themselves, justified, right? What were you thinking? Get your head out of your ass. Pay attention to where you're like, in those instances, I would say justified. Should you necessarily do it? Of course, all the professional leadership experts of the world will say, of course not. You should never do those sorts of things. And it's, yeah, cool. But you don't work in that environment. Otherwise, you shut your mouth and just acknowledge that, yeah, sometimes things need to be done that are, we'll say, not normal in the leadership spectrum. But other than that, yeah, always try to be cool, like you said. Or as Ted Lasso would say, be inquisitive, not judgmental, right? Who doesn't love
some Coach
Lasso? Right? But it's the thing. So why did you do it that way? Or why did you do this? I like to always start with that and find out what their rationale was. And then we can figure it out and fix it. You know? But if you just start in with the, you are fucked up. What the fuck was that? Don't let me see that shit again. And they have no idea what they did because they did exactly what they were taught to do. You didn't do anything, but now stress them out like they don't know what they're doing. And now they're going to be more hesitant to do stuff the next time with you. So just my observations.
Yeah, no, we're closing in on 45 minutes of rambling about a thing, but
yeah,
I think I'm going to summarize this by saying, yeah, chewing ass to chew ass doesn't do anybody any good. There has to be a pretty good reason to tear people up on scene, right? And I didn't mention this, but it is worth note that you don't give the patient a whole lot of confidence in the people taking care of them when you're tearing into the other providers. And look, I'm, believe it or not, and those people that actually know me and are listening to this podcast and have met me, I'm coming from a place of humility here because I've made a lot of these mistakes in my career. I don't think I'm perfect at this. I've done fuck this up before. It was very much a bit of a know-it-all, nanny-anny, do-it-right-or-get-the-fuck-out feller in my youth. But it's okay to hold a high standard. Just make sure that you come from... Here's the summary. One, don't be an asshole unless there's an absolute threat to life occurring on scene. Two, if there is anything that needs remediation, it is incumbent upon you as the leader to ensure the conversation is had in administrative time after the event. You cannot say, hey, you got that wrong, and then expect them to go fix it themselves. They don't know what they don't know if they got it wrong. So don't expect them to get it right if you don't go spend the time to remediate whatever you thought was a problem. You could be freaking wrong. And you have to approach that conversation from a perspective of, I could be wrong. Let me go see why they thought what they did they needed to do and go from there. But if you come in as a bull in a china shop and you're always right, and look, this doesn't just apply to the middle ground provider. This is super important if you are the HMFIC big swinging dick guy with every certification. You've done every sort of possible thing. We've all met the paramedic that, oh, I used to work in surgery and I used to sew livers together. And great. That's sweet. I'm happy for you. But the fact that you did some stuff before doesn't necessarily make you right now. And it's those providers that really know their shit that come from a perspective of humility. Those are the ones that everybody listens to, not the ones that come in and say, I know I'm right because I've been doing this longer than you and you're freaking wrong. All you're doing is giving coaching that people are going to ignore as soon as you walk out of the door because they've mentally shut down and said, I don't want to hear from this guy anymore. He has been an asshole and I don't like assholes. So thanks for the input, but screw you. And you're going to end up with a whole bunch of people that generally don't want to listen to you. So one, don't chew ass on scene unless there's an absolute threat to life. Two, if you're going to mitigate anything, it is incumbent upon the leader to go have the conversation and do the remediation. It is not up to the provider that got something wrong to fix it. And three, you could be wrong and you need to approach it that way because otherwise you are just making enemies. Even if you're right, they're not going to listen to you. There. I just summarized everything in what could have been a 7-minute podcast.
Yeah, it's no fun that way.
No, it's not. Any more thoughts there, my man?
No, I think that's a fine place to wrap it up.
Okay, then I'm just going to stop right now because we're not very good at it.
If you have any questions or comments or ideas for show topics, you can send us an email at theshow@emsonthemountain.com or hit us up on social media. We can be found on Facebook and Instagram at EMS on the Mountain, Twitter at EMSOTM, or you can engage with us and a whole community of wilderness EMS professionals at locals.com/wilderness EMS.
Until the next episode. Thanks for joining us, and until we see you on the mountain, train hard, be safe, and do good work.